This episode is brought to you by 6 Feet Up, the Python, Django, and AI experts who solve hard software problems. Whether it's scaling an application, deriving insights from data, or getting results from AI, 6 Feet Up helps you move forward faster. See what's possible at 6feetup.com.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django web framework. Carlton Gibson joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hey, Carlton.
Hello, Will. Today, nice jumper, by the way. And today we've got with us Andy Miller, who's big, very active in the Django community. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm good, thanks. I am well, yes.
That's good. People are going to know you as Nano Republica online, right?
Yeah. Yes, that is the moniker I came up with as a teenager, and it's stuck because it doesn't have any numbers after or anything like that. So it's just, yeah, that's
okay.
Teenage me.
that's still an achievement, though. You know, like you got your GitHub handle, you got everything else. That's good.
It's that one thing. Very easily, I'm not that, and it's an anonymous. Well, it's not anonymous because if you search Nano Republica, you will find me. But it's just something that I came up with as a teenager, and it stuck. So, yeah.
Go on, tell us a little bit about yourself, Andy, behind the scenes.
Okay. Where to start? I did CS at university, half CS, half electronic engineering. So not your classic, I don't know, is it your classic or non-classical?
No, but that's like electronic engineering is like CS with an upgrade, right? It's one notch higher.
Yeah, it was, the course title was Information Systems Engineering. There was 20 guys in my year. And so that shows you how popular it was. Yeah. You basically did everything from the transistor all the way up to software. And I lean towards more software in my third and fourth year. I currently live in Cambridge. I'll do the broad thing. I currently live in Cambridge, wife and two kids. And I've been running as a freelancer for the last 6 years and starting a startup, called Hamilton Rock. I'm CTO. That's like the basic intro, I think.
Okay, that's brilliant. Where do we want to go? Tell us about freelancing. 6 years is long enough to have sort of had the good times and the bad. So, you know.
Yeah, I started in 2019 because I quit my job, and we'll say no more about that job, except that I wanted out, but I also wanted to stay 4 days a week and not commute to London. Those that don't know UK, Cambridge is about an hour on the train from London, or maybe like hour, 2 hours. I'm like, I don't want to commute anymore. I'd had enough. So trying to find a job for 4 days a week before COVID and maybe remote or maybe local. It's not that. Cambridge isn't a huge city. There's a lot of tech here, but it's not all web tech. So I was like, oh, I'll give freelancing a go. And here we are 6 years later. I stumbled through COVID, used some savings to kind of get me through some hard months. But then there were some good times as well. And then I found regular clients who have paid the way. It's like one interesting thing, actually, I kind of reflect on for us as software engineers when it comes to freelancing. I have a few on the go at any one time, but they are much different to, say, a graphic designer or a copywriter or something, where they might have loads of projects in a year. And when I say loads, it's like you're talking tens or maybe even get up to 100 in a year because they're short, sharp things. Contrast that with us. It's actually like more multi-year, I found, contracts. You have three or four. If you get beyond four, your brain explodes because you can't, the context switching between different businesses is just like, nope, can't handle that, as well as running your own business. So yeah, that's...
And so, I mean, so when I was freelance, I freelanced for a long, 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 long time. And for me, the big interesting question was always the pipeline, was like, where's the next project, the next client, the next thing coming from? If you can do 100 projects in a year, then it's kind of easy because you've always got a new thing coming along the pipeline. And if anyone falls down, then no problem. But if you've only can have like two or three or four projects going on and they probably don't overlap that much, then one falls down, it can be really quite serious, right?
Yes. That's kind of where, so I had a bit of I lent a lot on like non-technical communities. So there's like a few freelance communities and I got one client through one of them, but also it's just been active on LinkedIn, as we love or hate the place, just kind of being there and maybe not trying to doom scroll, but just people do business there. As I've got a couple of good contacts from LinkedIn, but generally it's that's kind of where my writing habit. One of the reasons for starting my writing habit, I read a book. I'd have to go and get it. It's in this room somewhere. But it was a kind of like.
My daughter says things like that. Oh, it's in my room somewhere.
Like, it's in the office somewhere. It's like, I don't want to get up. But it was called The Manifesto of No Pitching. We could put it in the show notes at some point. But in it, it said writing is a way to demonstrate expertise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I was like, this is a way you show how good you are, or like that you have the expertise to not have to pitch for things. I should say, I also use like freelancing websites and stuff to find the initial gigs and kind of you just be everywhere. But that's kind of what started the blogging habit. And that combined with, there was two other people, a guy called Jonathan Stark, who is a software engineer by trade. And then he's gone into coaching and that kind of thing. And he does a daily newsletter. Every day sends a newsletter. Some days, yeah, but it's all plain text. Like, it's not fancy kind of like images and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Sometimes it will just be like him asking a question of his newsletter and be like, I've had this idea, respond back, or like a question. It goes over the same points. He's just demonstrating his, like, he has a book called Hourly Billing is Nuts. But then sometimes it's just an advertising for his Slack community and what's been going on. So it's like, it's a newsletter every day, but it covers the same ground again and again from different perspectives, or it's advertising a podcast that he's been on, or that kind of thing. So it works quite well. And then the other one, I followed a creative called David Cadavy. He's an American who's moved to Colombia. Discovered him ages ago. And he's about to put out his third book, actually. He had put out three books. I'm going to get them wrong. The middle one is Time Management, Mind Management, not Time Management. Get that the wrong way around. He's about to do one about finishing, and the first one was about starting. Whole creative process. But he brought out a book called The 100 Word Habit, which is where the 100 words came from. It's like, just try and write 100 words a day and see how you get. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do this for a year and try. I'm not doing every day, because writing it the weekend when you've got small kids is...
You have a little support group moment there.
Yeah, it's like, no, I'm just doing weekdays. I have control over my weekdays. So yeah, I started, where are we? We're 26. I finished, it was 2 years ago. Yeah, 24.
It's 24, because I went through them again just in prep for this. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I started. And the main, it was like, this was the reason to start. And then I had quite a lot of content loaded up, because I'd been like active on the Discord, and some people ask the same questions again. And not the same people, but new person comes along. How do I do user types? Or you see the same mistakes, like people using underscore all, and it's like, don't do that. Well, it's fine to start with as a prototype, but really you want to specify your fields, because you're just going to, like, bad habits that you see again and again and again. So I was just like, right, here's the content, and you just write and write and write, and it's led places. And then it's just forced me to also put ideas out into the world, ones that were ready or ones that were not ready, but where I've had ideas for packages or for, I don't know, community ideas, things have just, yeah, you've both followed along, and people can go to my website and just scroll through and search, but yeah.
Oh, no, it's good. It's a good effort, because you do keep it up, which I'm always impressed with.
Yeah, it's down to about once a week now. So,
I mean, it reminds me of us in a way, in that you started off with these foundational things of, like, you know, models, templates, URLs. You know, our early episodes were kind of like that, almost like university courses or like sections from a book where we talk about Django REST framework. And then once you exhaust that, then I saw, you know, for you, then you do like a 10-part series on building something from scratch, or you'd have different ideas. It really is that muscle of like being forced to think of something. And because otherwise it's so easy to have a thought and then, you know, something happens and then, you know, off it goes. And, you know, yeah. I find it's you have to think about it as doing it for yourself, and then everything else is a benefit. But there are these huge benefits that you can't, it's not a one-to-one thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It was just, I'm doing this goal and I'm just going to see where it leads and just try and just like keep pushing it. It was difficult towards the end. There were some, and over holidays, it was like, what do I write about? And there were some days I was at like 11 o'clock at night being like, I have to put word pen to paper or metaphorical yeah. paper and just get something out. But yeah, it was just doing it for myself and just push. And the benefits
and it's not a lot of words either. I mean, I guess you started doing parts, but I mean, I remember, you know, because a number of them we put in a newsletter, I would yeah. regularly on some of your technical stuff be like, it was like a cliffhanger, you know, it was like, I was like, wait, keep going. Like, how could you, I would almost yeah. find that the hardest is like, because for me, if I finally get something going, I'm like, all right, let's just get it all out.
Yeah, it was
it's like poetry almost. So like,
yeah, the cliffhangers were kind of like when I had a series, it was like, oh, great, that does a week or something, because
yeah.
I'm thinking about it all the time. Like you write it and then it's like, what's the next topic? So doing a series was actually easier to some extent because you go, right, okay, I can just break it at different points. And for me, I was like, I could have written it all in one go, but it was nice just to kind of go, right, that's me done for the day, move on. And you're probably like some of the later posts, like even the ones that I'm writing now, are probably going to be slightly longer because I'm like, okay, this is my post for the week. I'm not going to intentionally split it up for a daily thing. It's, I should probably take some of those series and concatenate them into longer posts at some point. But, you know, maybe AI
I like this. I like people doing this. Eric Mathis also has his Mostly Python. You know, I think there's room for a technical series of things. But Carlton, yeah. you were going to make a point there.
Well, no, I just, I don't want to swing away from writing, but I did want to cut back slightly to yeah. freelancing just before we move yeah, on yeah. and leave it. But you're doing startup now. Is that, are you still freelancing as well, or are you doing the startup full time?
Half and half. I am full time on the startup and have been for like the last few months.
And full time on freelancing as well.
I have a couple of maintenance contracts. And some people paying off bills, and then I've got like an advisory role. I do right. need to go back and do I'm looking at my financial planning for the year, and yeah. I'm like, I need to probably go and do a bit more freelancing this year just to cash flow.
Okay. So what I wanted to ask you about was then how you're feeling at the moment, because you've 6 years is plenty of time to see the ups and downs of the business and see how it works. And, you know, you go through yeah. Quite a bad recession previously, and then there's this current situation. Yeah. And I wonder what are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic? What words of advice do you have? That kind of, how do you see the situation currently? Because a lot of people are worried and struggling.
Oh, that's a big question. That's a deep question.
Well, it's a deep show, mate.
Yeah. on the face of it, I wouldn't recommend freelance. Like, if you're freelancing seriously, I wouldn't recommend juniors do freelancing, because as much as it's easy way, it's an easy way to then kind of give freelancing a bad name or contracting a bad name. Because I think I benefited from doing freelancing, 10 years? No. Yeah, almost 10 years into my career kind of thing. Like I had some experience to kind of go, yeah, I can build things, rather than people going, and I've seen it in Discord where people come in like, I need to build this for a client and I have no idea. And you're like, surely you need to have some idea. How did you like, but it's blindly, you don't want blind leading the blind. That's just my, but that's for me, how I feel about the current situation. Personally, I put it down to faith. Like I believe I'm a Christian. I believe in that, but that's kind of part of the reason I trust something else. I trust God, and that's part of my kind of why I went freelancing as well. Like I was like, I'm just stepping out and trusting that money's going to come through at the right time and the right decisions are going to come, that people are going to show up at my door effectively.
Yeah.
And that's kind of happened, like where I even the kind of the co-founder, how my co-founder reached out or was looking for someone, I was just like, I wasn't expecting to get that at all. We can talk about it in a minute, but it's just that I think you've just got to step out and just try. It's not sitting still. It's doing the cold outreach, kind of applying to all the things, but it's then going, what's the right thing? And just, that's not really an answer, I know, but it is an answer in terms of like, you got to do all the right things. And there are plenty, I'm not going to consume knowledge. Like for those that want to start businesses, there's like, hundreds of podcasts. And during COVID, I was binged listened to hours and hours and hours on general, and not even, and don't limit yourself to like software freelancing. Like, listen to design freelancers, listen to copywriters, listen, like, get wide perspectives, and don't be the only software person in that room. Like, I'm definitely part of some communities where I'm the only software engineer, and it's like, great. That's like, if people are going to come to me if they have software problems.
And you have a podcast too. Like, we shouldn't sleep on that, right? In Progress, that you've been doing for a while. I think I was one of your very first people who signed up.
Yeah, I started that to just experiment with a platform that kind of someone else had put out as like a private podcast. And I was like, I want to experiment with this. So I was like, I'm just going to talk about, and like, experiment. It was like, for me, it's also with the content game. It's like, start with writing. Okay, I'm comfortable writing. Start with, then go to audio. And then maybe, I'm not promising anything, but maybe this year I experiment with video. Like, I've kind of got the setup. I did get this all the setup to do video, but I hadn't got the kind of screencasting. I need to sort that out in the editing process, and kind of, that's the next stage, that if I have some time this year, maybe I'd look at videos. Like, one video I'd love to do, or series I'd love to do, is a video series of the official tutorials, and just step that through and keep it to the LTS versions. I'm not saying every change I'm going to re-record a video, but the idea of, again, when people come to the Discord or to the forum, they're like, I want to watch a video. And you're like, okay, YouTube's not great. They teach a lot of bad practices. We often come, people come and we come fixing, like, they're not using forms and that kind of, like, there's not a good set of community videos. There are some, but they're, a lot of them are, should I say, want people who want to kind of show how to be, sell courses or want to be entrepreneurs or go from zero to hero, which is not, I'm not saying there's anything bad, but there's no one from the community that I see doing.
Or they don't get any views. Like, there's a couple, there's, I'm not going to throw out names on this, but there's a couple people I see their content and I'm like, this is amazing. Like, why would I ever do a course? And yet they have a fraction of the views of someone who does a lot of things on a lot of topics. And then, you know, they're helpful, I guess, on Django, but they're not Django people, right? They're not even web people. So they miss so many best practices. And yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, there's some people who do good stuff, but it's interesting that like no one at a Django Con has like a million views on YouTube. And same thing in Python. Python's the same way. No one who's at a PyCon or involved in Python is one of these people making a million views of subscribers.
There's this disconnect, I think, between video and Python Django. I don't know what it is. It's just the community aspect. I'd want to be someone in the community doing videos, if that makes sense. Like, Will, you're probably one of the top people in that. Like, I have visibility.
The thing is, video takes a lot of work. It's a totally different skill set. Also, the people looking at videos, I think, are younger than us, many of them, you know, so like there's a whole bunch of factors. And as I say, I think the thing is writing is so you can write from anywhere. You can write from a cafe, a video, like you need so much setup and there's just so much more production involved for it not to look terrible that it feels like if it misses, it's like a much bigger, you know, it's like, I don't know, it just feels like a bigger miss.
Oh, completely. And that's why I haven't done it today, because I've stalled on the kind of like, I maybe recorded one video. And then I was like, what do I do now in the terms of editing? And I'm just like, I was like, nope, okay. And just stopped. So I was like, writing, audio, like, because with the In Progress one, I've automated all of that as well. So I hit stop record. It churns away, AI does the transcript, opens a PR for me on my website, a review.
I like your transcripts, by the way, because sometimes, you know, actually, often I like reading more than podcasts or vodcasts. So I just like blast through it. So I appreciate that you have that.
Yeah, that was a Christmas project of, I was like, Whisper CPP does the audio to text. And then I pass over another pass, I think, with a local model to kind of categorize it and do the section headers and stuff. But yeah.
Well, I'll say one more, and the Carlton has the heavy questions, but I think we're sort of circling around. Like, you seem to like freelancing, right? I mean, this is the thing, is that when you freelance, your mind is so activated with different projects and problems that to go from that to working for one company on one code base is, you know, it's a tough transition.
Yeah. What's been really interesting is that the last month has been intense, and I've come out of it and I'm like, wow, that was intense just to work on one thing week in, week out, day in, day out kind of thing. Because normally, like the last couple of months, I've been focused on it, but in the evenings I've been, I don't know, playing with other bits and pieces of Django or other little projects and side projects kind of thing. But it's just been all focused. And I've enjoyed it though. I've been kind of enjoyed the progress I've made. And yes, yeah, it's tough. And I would have stuck with freelancing. And I will probably, when this startup runs its course, I will be back, I think, freelancing. I've enjoyed it and I'll stick at it. But I've really enjoyed the freedom of kind of like freelancing and kind of family life and that mix. But it's, yeah, it was an opportunity I couldn't pass up, kind of like as things went along. And we can, I guess, talk about the startup now if you want.
Yeah, tell us about it. So come on, let's
we can. Okay,
is it a name?
It's called Hamilton Rock. I didn't come up with the name. That was my co-founder's been working on it for years before I did. I came along. And it's a, I'm going to call it a fintech. I'm not going to call it a bank. While we do provide banking services, I'm going to get like with the legalese here, it's, we won't have a banking license in the US. It's going to operate in the US. It's targeting small e-commerce firms. And so we're building banking and then we're going to add features and bits on top that target e-commerce firms and are specific for them. To date, I have just built the banking piece. That's enough. There's just a lot to build when it comes to kind of moving money and storing money and onboarding and all the extras.
Well, floating fields, decimal points, integer types, like that's a, like we've heard some horror stories. I'm sure you have some, right? You want to get your model fields correct.
Yes. Like, so yeah, I learned from last year with Octopus Energy and it was I forget his name, but like big ints on all the primary. Yeah. Was on the others at Timber.
Yeah.
Big ints on all my primary keys and all that kind of stuff. Everything's stored as cents. I'm not storing dollars and it's like, I'm storing all as cents and we're backed by Stripe. So Stripe do everything in cents as well. So it's just that one-to-one mapping. I think the biggest interesting thing is I've been building our own internal ledger as well, and that's interesting. We'll see how that goes.
double book yeah. I hope.
Yes, double book. I'm using PG triggers and stuff to make it append only and that kind of thing, so we'll see how it goes. I've gone this is how I think it wants, but we've not hit production yet, so yeah. A lot of it is still theoretical in my head.
So I want to ask about the complexity of that, because obviously that's quite a complex domain in and of itself, and it's got quite strict business logic rules. And it's the kind of case where people would argue about moving away from Django to a certain extent and adding a kind of service layer on top of that with a business logic in pure domain objects. And I was, wondering if you might speak to that for a moment.
I've kept everything pure Django so far. So everything is either I'm using your library, CrudView's, and I've extended that with extra like Ajax. It's HTML, pure HTML, template partials, a lot of partials, a lot of HTMX, views. All the logic is currently in forms.
Okay, good.
Most of the like internal logic is in forms, and then managers query sets. It's all there. And the time I haven't, I've still called it a manager, is there's an onboarding manager, which is like the only non-Django. It's just a class which holds onboarding, but onboarding is just pulling together different bits from the code base and it's just into one place.
Okay.
The place I pull out of it is in forms. I make a call out to Stripe when I need to do API calls, and that's wrapped with Katters. So Katters is just its own serialization layer going from Django to Stripe data structures and back. And that's it so far. And so I will say I need to go, one of my tasks for either this month or next month is to sit down, and I've been using Claude Code a lot to get it all out, and some of it I do need to go back and just read and make sure that it's doing it the way I'd like it to do. So when it does come to compliance regulation. I understand what's going on. I do, like, it's working as it should do, minus a few bugs, which I'm fixing. But it's that, I heard the term the other day, comprehension debt. So making sure that my understanding and AI's understanding is in line. And I've been going so fast that I know it's not aligned right now. And so I need to go and make it aligned.
This portion of Django Chat is brought to you by 6 Feet Up. What's stopping you? Maybe it's an application that won't scale or an AI initiative that just isn't delivering. That's where 6 Feet Up comes in. With deep expertise in Python, Django, and AI, they solve hard software problems, modernize platforms, and get teams to market faster. Their impact speaks for itself. Automating healthcare pipelines for hospitals, helping NASA explore Pluto, building severe weather prediction tools, and applying AI to connect farmers with vital crop data. When the stakes are high and the problems are hard, 6 Feet Up is the partner that delivers. See what's possible at 6feetup.com.
Guys, before you cut in, Will, I just want to talk about that thing about putting your logic in forms, because in from a sort of pure architecture point of view, that's like, oh, horror, because the forms are sanitizing data as they come in, and then you've got the sort of the business logic in the save method or whatever to check that your business rules are implied. But what I like about that method, that approach, is that it scales to quite nicely. And then if you do need to separate those two steps, the data sanitation from the business rule, it's very easy to pull them apart later on.
I found it's like, for me, it's serializers or forms are the place you put logic in Django. I put it in air quotes because, like, without inventing a new class, that's the place I'd put it. And if I was, I'd probably shift it into query sets or managers as a, like, if it needs to across multiple models or multiple, like. But I've so far, I want to try and keep to that kind of architecture as long as possible until it kind of breaks down and we'll see what happens then. But yeah.
But at that point, you've got better,
other people then. I'm not writing code at that point, hopefully.
Will, you were going
to. Well, I mean, so many things to think about. I want to give you a chance to talk about, I think you published this yesterday, model renderers. So component stuff around Django, which is related to forms. Do you want to? Can we mention more about that? I thought that was kind of interesting. We'll put a link in the show notes to this post.
So one thing that I played around with when I was styling up the start Hamilton Rock, I was like, I'll play around with form renderers, because why not? I want to try and reduce the amount of templates that I'm creating. So when it comes to rendering a form, I want the form to look the same everywhere. Ideally, you just do the brackets form and you're away. And so I found myself, I created a project form renderer, which has some in it. And then I ended up in that same file, well, it's actually one template file using partials. So I've got one template file with a load of partials defined, which define widgets and the forms. And you're just referencing partials from the renderer, and I'm monkey patching the widget templates. So that's just two files. That's all your form styles done, which is quite nice. And I was wondering, wouldn't it be nice, or I say nice, would it be an interesting experiment to see if, like, you could define a model renderer? So, like, from Neapolitan, Carlton, you've got two template tags of object detail and object list, I think.
Yeah, just to render a table or a single instance.
Yeah, but essentially taking that and making it configurable from a class like a form renderer, and then have maybe a link to the form renderer for that model as well. I don't know what this is, just this was an initial idea that I had at the end of last year, and it's like the idea of, you define that and then go, right, okay, if you want to customize how your model's rendered on a page, and you just go object or object list, and you're kind of, one idea I'm generally playing around with the introduction of, with form renderers, with simple block tag, with template partials, I think we're very, very quite close to having components in core Django, but they're just not, they haven't been drawn together yet into this is how you do it. I actually have one tab from Django, it's Django Cotton's, I think it's their README. They have a table which compares, I'm going to pull it up now. Give me a moment. There we go. It's got Cotton, Django components, slippers, and template partials. And of course, it's saying Cotton ticks most of the boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one which Django Components does, but Cotton doesn't do. But I'd like to just at some point spend some time going through that and being like, oh, actually, while Django, like, well, partials doesn't do everything, but if you do partials and then simple block tag, you get it's like, what parts do you need to bring together from core Django to actually have something comparable? And yes, the DX, like Cotton, provides a nice user developer experience, but I'm like, how, I think we're closer than we think we are in core Django. So I'm just kind of pushing at those boundaries. And especially where, like, I take the another blog post I wrote recently about like icon packs using template partials.
Yeah, I saw that.
I didn't come up with that idea. I will say Claude kind of came up with that idea and I pushed it a bit. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I never thought to use partials like that, but it's just, it did it. And so I'm like, okay, what else can we explore with partials and the newer things that haven't been experimented much with in the later releases?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm totally with you on all of that. I find, you know, I'm still finding template partials to be like revelatory and like in the patterns they enable, and this idea that you've got one template file with the related partials in it, and it's like, oh, it's that one, and they're all next to each other, and it's like, that's lovely.
Yeah.
And then for the the component problem, which I think is think of as the kind of problem of slots, you know, where you've got a layout kind of, and you need to inject bits into it, and still the DTL by itself, even with template partial, doesn't do that perfectly. So that's when the Cottons and the whatnot. And I use I use HT Py for this, which is where you define these fragments in Python. And I like it. There's Cotton, there's Django Components, there's several options out here, and it's just all of us together struggling towards what are the patterns that we'll be using in 5 years' time. And I think it's really super. It's just a lovely time to be working in Django around this area, I think.
Yeah. I'm resisting essentially installing one of those third-party packages. I'm just going to, every time I come up, I'm like, what can I do in Django? And what can I patch in Django to make it work? And I will probably need to install one at some point.
Yeah.
But for the time being, I'm like, how far can I abuse what's there?
That's a really good technique. I used to maintain Crispy Forms. I used Crispy Forms for a decade. And when I started the new project, I was like, I'm not going to install it. I'm going to see how far I can get with the renderers and template partials. And I still haven't installed it. I'm like, there are bits where I'm like, oh, I could just do that dynamic layout. But I'm like, okay, what do we do? And exactly, how far can we push it without the dependency?
Yeah.
So I think that's experience talking, though. Sorry to jump in. Like you were saying, you know, 10 years and then freelance, like, because a freelancer would just pull off the shelf, oop, solved, right? Whereas with a little more experience, you're like, even if I later go to it, I want to play around and muck in there and have that deep understanding and know where that line is. But you don't know where any lines when you're starting out.
That's very true. Part of it as well is that, for me as well, I want to see what Django, like, like if I hit the edge of like, say, and it's like, actually, we need this small thing in Django to
like template partials,
like template partials. But like, what's the next? Is it like defining variables in a template or something like that? Which means you don't have to necessarily define. I say a template tag's not a big thing, but like, what, identifying the small gaps that then, if we do patch that, if we do decide to patch it, I'm not saying it's a definite, but it's like, understanding where the edges are to then round them out, and then you go, ah, here's the component solution that we're looking for, rather than lumping more than we need into Django core. So it's an experiment in that way as well.
Yeah, this is the way, I think. This is, it's not only how we find the right answers forward, but it's how you develop your own mastery as well. It's win-win.
Well, and part of that is also just taking, like, both of you have been talking about, like, oh, this is what one does. It's finding yourself the time to do that, right? I think if you're at a company, if you're just endlessly reactive and dealing with pull requests, it's very difficult to find the time to, not to learn, but you know what I mean? Like to round it all out and to come up with these things, because the business imperative is not for you to do that.
Yeah, that's a challenge. And that's actually, I say one thing I'm in going to enjoy when I'm being positive, when the company grows, is I want to carve out that time and make sure that Hamilton Rock gives back to Django and to open source, and we make time for that thing, because I know intrinsically that I wouldn't be here without Django. So I'm going to make sure Django gets the support it needs within reason. The business needs to function, but
it's good marketing too, right? You'll get a good Django person out of it.
Yeah, sorry, exactly. Carlton.
And you're investing in the foundation that you've built your business on, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly that.
It's not a stupid thing to do.
No, it's not at all. It's like, it makes complete sense, but you need to walk people through it. And
I think all of that's really exciting. Okay, so you talk about Django and you're big in the community. Tell us what all the things you've been doing.
I read off the list, right? So
yeah, go on. Spout
it. I'll do it in chronology. I joined the Discord and I realized, oh, I actually do know quite a lot. Because at that point in the freelance, I was like, I know what I know, I've learned. And then you go and you're like, oh, actually, I do know quite a lot, because there's beginners asking lots of questions. And then I was asked to be made a moderator, and I was like, sure. And Tim was a moderator, Tim Schilling at that point. So we're both very active and both moderators. I then went along to DjangoCon, and that was in Edinburgh. I really enjoyed that. I was there for just the conference days that time, because I had family holiday during the sprints. I was just continued to be active in the community, in Discord mainly. Kind of did the forum. I'm more active on the forum now that it's an open tab on my browser. Started a Django Social in Cambridge after hearing John's interview with you two. I was like, yeah, I could do that. Again, another freelance marketing, local freelance marketing tactic. I was like, let's just be the Django person that everyone knows in Cambridge.
And you're in Cambridge. As an American, Cambridge is like, you know, it's not like the middle of nowhere.
No. But it's, there's actually, there's not... There's probably more Django here than you realize, but it's all big life science companies, so they don't realize.
And Arm has a big office there too, right? I mean, just in terms
Arm has a big office, and the university itself uses Django a lot as well. But it's getting into those big places, and I've not been successful at all with that. But that's kind of But I've met a few people in the community and other people in Cambridge that use Django, and it's like, there's some connection.
It's the same thing for me here, MIT, Harvard, there's a lot of Django, both being taught and then also just the infrastructure. And yet when I've interacted with some of those people, it's like a different planet because I'm like, oh, Django, let's talk about it. But I haven't bridged that divide. I've given up trying, but it's weird that it can be the same thing, and yet their world and my world are just like so radically different. I'm like, what?
Yeah, that's very much the case. I'm looking at it now. Last year, I got made an admin of the Discord because I also started the online community working group. Last year, I did the lightning talk at DjangoCon Europe about my 100 words.
We have a link to that timestamp. So.
And then also did Django Nauts sessions, which was that was the starting point of me getting into contributing more back to the community as well, code-wise, and being less scared of those things, if that makes it. It forced me to make time for it as well. I think that's why I got in as well. Tim was like, you can do this. But I was like, yeah, but if you give me 8 weeks to make sure I do it, and I'm accountable to someone, then it will happen. And that's what happened. So,
a deadline. There's a freelancer talking. I need a deadline. Yeah.
Give me a deadline. Give me a space, and I'll do it.
I would consider you to be one of the more active and people give more time. So, I really salute you in everything that you do and the effort you put.
I realize it's one of. I've described it. It goes back to university. When I was a teenager, I was like, didn't quite have a. I had friends, but it was like, didn't quite feel. Went to university, I was like, I found my people. I found my people again in the Django community, where it's just like, get to walk in the room at a conference or even on Discord, and you're just like, you feel like we're friends. And it's just like, all talking the same language, same ethos, same community, right?
Yeah,
I would say from an outside perspective, you came in like this like meteor of like knowledge with this like 100 words where, you know, because Jeff Triplett and I doing the newsletter, we're always hunting around for stuff. And suddenly it was like, again. Like, I think I even told you, I was like, I would have put like almost all of them in there, but we can't just make it, you know, same thing with Adam Johnson. I'm like, I can't just repost everything you do. But I think of, you know, I'm sure there's other people out there who have similar or more knowledge than we have, but they don't commit to doing something, right? Or they write amazing blog posts and then 5 months passes, right? And there needs to be some consistency and commitment to, I guess, get on the radar of people as, oh, and then from there, all the, you know, I think that's the thing is like, it's easy as a practitioner to think, I need to get better at coding. I need to get better at Python or Django. And it's like, you gotta like, put your umbrella wide and see what falls in. You can't just be narrow and in a cave somewhere hacking away.
Yeah, it's definitely that consistency when going back to the blogging, right? It was just like, I'm just going to be consistent. And some of the posts aren't about Django at all. Some of them are like, I did this on holiday, but I'm going to write every day and I'm going to, I could have dropped off after that, but it's just, after a few weeks or months, the consistency's there. It's a habit. And yeah.
But it's a community thing too. I mean, because I think about this again, like I feel like Carlton and I, we started off with, I think, pretty high quality takes on Django. But at a certain point, you know, now what? Right. And it's like, okay, well, now we'll talk to people in the community. And I've come to be more accepting of the fact that there's nuggets of information. Sometimes we go technical, but sometimes we're just chatting as one would in a hallway or at a meetup. And, you know, many of us are working remotely. So there's value in that, even if, you know, it doesn't have to be reinventing the core of Django every podcast to have value. But, you know, part of me thinks like, oh, I should be like, you know, more hardcore with everything all the time.
No, I think it's what's the classic phrase, come for the code, stay for the community. This is a really good insight into what we're thinking about as a community. Like, getting the breadth of voices is like, this is where we're thinking as a community. And the conferences are great. Like, you go there, and Danielle kind of made this in the lightning talk in Dublin. It's like, it's very exclusive. It costs easily £1,000 even to get there, right? For a conference. And probably more in the US. I don't know. I've not tried to cost out the US one, but but the getting to these places is very, very expensive for most people. And so having online community, and this is kind of where the online community for me started. It's like, how can we make the online community replicate the in-person conference for everyone that wants to be there but can't be there for whatever reason? And how do we experiment with ideas that are just, yeah, is it monthly onboarding, an onboarding call or a community call where people just get, and the DSF office hours is part of that to some extent. Like, that's one example of it, that kind of people just jump on a call once a week. I don't get to join because it's dinner time, but that's
that American bias. I know.
Yeah, but it's like for example, I know I've got community inside. On the Discord, we've built up like a staff team of helpers and moderators, and the private staff off-topic channel is active like pretty much every single day. There's just talking and checking in with people, and it's private because it's the staff channel. But like, I could see that being replicated. It's like, you get a small group of people and you slowly build it up, and you can have community online, but it just takes time and effort. And on ramps, we've talked, like you both have talked about this before, it's like smoothing those on ramps into the community, and it not being you have to do XYZ. It's like, just help out. But it is that consistency as well. Like, so many people drive by, ask for the help or their homework assignment or whatever, and disappear. The ones that stay around are the ones that become part of the community. And they're there and they choose to be a part of it.
How do you handle the setting limits to your commitment, because you've got young kids, you've got a business, you've got another bit, your freelancing business on the side that you're still doing. You've got all the time you spend on Discord. You go to that. You said you've got the forum open. You're doing these working groups. You comment on almost every significant debate I can do. You've got your blog that you're writing. How do you avoid doing too much?
With great difficulty. My calendar is an absolute mess. Well, it looks like an absolute mess, but it's like very strict scheduling of when I do things.
So time boxing everything though.
Time boxing, like I, for example, every night of the week is probably there's something there, but it's like doing either date night or I'm doing Django stuff, or it's I do Cub Scouts, so doing Cub Scouts, or it's like, or but then I've architected my life that between 8:30 in the morning and 3:30-ish, I can do what I like. So like one thing that happened during my freelance career was one client was having a production issue, but I had at that point had a day rate to, or my day booked in with someone else. And I was like, I can't have this. So I've over the 6 years structured it so that people pay me monthly for a service, but then it then gives me the opportunity to choose how I run my day, run my week. I have complete freedom, and that's not, so it does mean I can jump on a call at any time. Like it's not, I have some standing calls, but it also means I get to go climbing every Monday, or I can go out for lunch with my wife on Fridays because she has Fridays. Like I've worked to create that flexibility, and therefore it means I can stay engaged in different places, and also worked with the freelancing to get my prices to a point where I don't need to be working every single hour of the day generally to enable me to do the other things like write blogs. And it's creating that margin, and then I fill the margin, but that's
with what you want to.
Yeah, with what I want to do and what I would like to do.
That seems healthy. I mean, there's a season to things, right? I mean, I feel like at some point I was writing really regularly and, you know, all these things, and now I just talked to Carlton and Jeff, and then everything else flows from there.
That's why I went from daily down to weekly of the post. I was like, I've done the year, and I'd run out, and I was like, I can't keep doing this because it was just all consuming for that year. And I was like, now it's got to be a weekly thing where when I have an idea, and if I skip a week, so be it. But it's like when I have ideas, I'm not going to force them, but I'll write about them when they come. So.
Yeah. Well, Carlton's always been a good influence for me because his kids are a little bit older than mine. You know, sometimes I would, be like, oh, I want to work on this thing, but I'm at the playground or I'm doing this thing. And obviously I want to spend time with my kids, but he would always like, oh, no, that's when the deep thinking happens. You know, when you're pushing a 3-year-old on the swing for 40 minutes, you know, it sort of frees up the space. It's the equivalent of like a Kantian walk or something, but with kids, right?
Exactly that. It's like,
right. It is true, right? Our brains are always going. Even when you're rock climbing, part of you is thinking about like, oh, big int. That's interesting. Like,
yeah, you know? The guy David Cadaby I mentioned, he has this thing about front burner, and he has in one of his books, he talks about front burner and back burner. When you're cooking and you have like the things you're focusing on the front, and you might move something to the back when you need to let it simmer or something like that when cooking. And it's the same kind of thing with creative projects or code. It's like, you may be focusing on something, but there's always background work going on and you need to push them back. You can't always be on something. So, yeah.
All right. Should we go to projects and books phase of things? I'll say yes. I'll start. Books, how to build your own LLM from scratch. Ooh. I'll throw that one out there. I have been working through. So basically you in Python build like a GPT-2 equivalent. So going through, pre-training pipeline. I'll be honest, I haven't finished it. I'm like halfway through it. It is technical, but it's super interesting. And I wish I'd, instead I've been like, I find myself drawn to, like these books of like, people making snappy comments on AI. But anyways, build your own LLM from scratch. Really good. Knows what he's talking about. You don't really know a thing unless you, code it yourself from hand, not with Claude. So
you can't, I was going to ask, can you get Claude to implement the ChatGPT?
Yeah, well, no, I love your phrase comprehension debt. Cause I've been thinking about like, what is that? Yeah. There needs to be a name for this, right? Like, cause even if the code is correct, and let's just assume that it is, if I didn't struggle and type it, like, because I come from doing it beforehand, I'm like, I go into these code bases and I'm like, what is going on here? Like, you know, it's like, am I losing my mind? It's like, no, I vibe coded that. Oh, that's why I don't, I can't like just spin it up as much as, yeah.
I'm not going to claim I coined that term. I heard it from a YouTube show on AI. Well,
it needs some term for that.
Yeah. But yeah, it was an interview with, one thing on AI that I will say is that I follow a guy called Brian Castle, who's from Connecticut, and he has a site called Builder Methods. That is, he's doing very sensible takes on AI. It's not all the vibe coding. It's like he's targeting professionals like ourselves and fairly sensible.
I know this guy, or I don't know him, but I've followed a bunch of his stuff. He's done like a million different like YouTube channels and.
Yeah, he's done a lot, but he's focusing on doubling down on AI, and he's produced some good tools that I'm interested in and been using. So anyway, too many to choose. I'm gonna plug, disclaimer, the author is a good friend of mine. For fiction, it's World of Astrom. It's a friend of mine. He has written a trilogy. It's like Tolkien-esque fantasy. So he's got a trilogy out, which is now in one big book, and then I'm subscribed to his Patreon, and he's got a quadrilogy or maybe more that's like set 40 years after the net published book. So I'm reading like a chapter, the first draft, every month as he's publishing it, and it's a very, very good
read. Sounds like catnip for you, Carlton. You like these types
of things. Yeah, no, I was just thinking I could get that for the children.
And then nonfiction, one author I recommend, I think I might have mentioned it earlier, Rob Walling. His book, Microconf. I've just finished reading his latest, which is Exit Strategy, about exiting a business. I know I'm nowhere near that, but I'm reading it for context later down the line, preparing myself. But yeah, his advice and his is just very sensible when it comes to, if you're interested in building a software business, I entirely recommend it.
Okay, very good. I've been reading this little one by Anne Applebaum called Autocracy Inc., which is about the dictators who want to run the world. It's about what's going on in Hungary and, you know, what's going on in the United States and what's going on, you know, around the world. And the methods that these people use to undermine our democracies. It's, you know, about sort of halfway through it, and it's pretty good.
It rings true to the
And I mean, it's out in 2024, and you know, start of 2026, it's all the worse. It's anyway, it's the Autocracy Inc. It's worth reading. It won the Pulitzer Prize, so it's but it lays down quite clearly the kind of behaviors you see with like the crazy things that happen in the media, and you're like, why on earth is this happening in the media? And it's all part of like a sort of standard playbook that, you know, it talks about, and it's like, okay, that's interesting. So I've been reading that and enjoying it a lot.
Quickly, projects. I'm going to shout out Andy, yours Django Prod Server. I think we ran out of time to fully dive into it, but we'll link to it. I've been following it. I think you're still kind of working on it. Like, it's got a number of stars.
Yeah, there's a few bugs I need to fix and stuff. I am working on, I've got an open PR with Django Cookie Cutter to get it merged in. I need to fix a bug, but that's kind of my next phase. I've talked about it on the forum in places, is how do you market? You've got a thing, how do you market what to do? And this is
create your own starter project.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was like, I could create my own starter project, but actually it'd be better to get it into one that's already used. So lucky I've worked with Bruno, who maintains it. So I was like, hey, Bruno, could we maybe shift this into, and he's like, yeah, he played around with it. He's like, so that I'm also thinking of getting it. I need to work on Django Simple Deploy and get it into that as well. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be a good place for it to live as well. Nice pairing. It's there. I just need to slowly chip away on it this year. And so keep improving it, keep promoting it. There might be a lightning talk or maybe something more.
No, I heard you. There might be the CFP's not till Sunday, Andy.
So yeah. before you joined, Will, Carlton was ribbing me to submit a CFP.
DjangoCon Europe, where the CFP goes this weekend. So.
I will be there, but whether I'm doing a talk or not, we'll see.
Well, we'll see.
I'll be doing a lightning talk, but we'll see if there's an actual talk.
Good.
My project is, the at the end of last year, the us in the online community working group, we opened a repo very similar to new features, but for community ideas. And it kind of probably got lost. The announcement probably got lost between board elections and 6.0 release and that kind of thing. But it's sitting there. You can submit issues of like, I want this to happen on GitHub or Discord, or and so we can start tracking them and start implementing features, and or own it. People can start seeing what we've got planned as well. I have dumped a lot of ideas on there. But yeah, go have a look. But it's, yeah, community ideas rather than stuff to go into Django. It's for around the community itself.
I think that's good. I think that the new features board has been quite successful. It's given people a place to put their ideas, and several ideas have been promoted forward, and it gives a chance for discussions to happen, and it's away from the sort of the main workflow. And I can only see ideas for the community having their own space as being a positive thing too. So super. I just wanted to mention Django Health Check, which popped up again this week. Coding Joe, what's his name? Joe Meron, Johannes Meron. It enables you to set up health checks for, I don't know, your caches, your databases, your disk space, your memory, and then you can ping those health checks, and then you can decide what actions you want to take. In case, you know, suddenly your disk space has gone to 80%. I want at least a notification of that, or I want, you know, some automatic action to happen. Oh, my cache went down, you know, it's no longer reachable. Oh, I better take action. So it's a really good project, and it's very easy to write your own checks. And, you know, again, Joe puts an awful lot of work into keeping these projects updated. So I wanted to mention that.
Great. Well, I feel like we could easily go for another hour, but we'll try to keep it to under an hour slightly. I guess last quick thing, our magic wand question. So if you had one power to change one thing in Django, code, community, what would you put your foot down for?
I was thinking about this a lot last week. I honestly, it's the funding and the budget of, because in the community, as I see it, there's a lot of movement of a lot of ideas, but they're all limited because we're all volunteers. I say all. Okay, the fellows are paid, but even them, it's like everyone is limited.
Yeah.
If we could hire an executive director, if we could hire more fellows, or even hire freelancers, like take the marketing and the website. It's like, if you could throw cash at that, great. Then
you've written some posts around this idea too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like the idea of, I think that's the one thing I would change, is just go give Django $1 million or whatever it needs to just grow. And I think that would allow us to just, I like the leisurely pace that Django takes, but I think we could be a bit faster if we had more, and we would be probably naturally faster. And I think that I'm not saying everything has to go JavaScript speed, shall we say, but it's a bit.
Yeah. Well, I know that, you know, Jeff Triplett, who's the new president, and the new board are working on this. People have been working on this. I know it's going to be frustrating because there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that, until something happens, you know, it's easy to say, why isn't something happened? But I know that stuff is happening. It's just, it's a lot of work to get a bunch of money from a big company. I think that's kind of almost the big problem, is like, if we had the muscle to get it, but we don't. And so they, even if they want to give it, there's that disconnect.
Yeah. That's why I say the funding, because I think everything else is just sitting there. Like, there's energy in different parts of the community. And I'm like, if there was, it's that, I think the funding is the thing holding the community back right now. So if I had to wave a magic wand, it would be money dumped into an account that people could then use. I just see the energy in people wanting to push it forward. And so I don't think we need any magic wand anywhere else. It's just that kick up. Yeah.
But, well, there's this like meme of like, you know, just one missing piece is like this brain with puzzle pieces, and someone has a thing that's $1 billion. You know, my wife and I like often like share that. We're like, oh, there's just one little thing would fix whatever realm it is.
But yeah, I'm quite happy with Django as the code. Like, generally, I'm quite happy with, like, yeah, it's got its warts, but any 20 piece of software does have its warts. And I'm like, it does the job. It's fun to work with. The community's great. I'm happy with it. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't. I'd have found something else.
Yeah, yeah. Same. Well, all right, we're going to have links to all the things. Thank you for taking the time. It's fun to finally have you on. Again, I've been reading your stuff for, I guess, over 3 years now. So
it's been a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So DjangoChat.com on YouTube, and we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again to 6 Feet Up, the Python, Django, and AI experts you call for the hardest software problems. From scaling applications to simplifying data complexity and unlocking AI outcomes, they help you move forward faster. See what's possible at 6feetup.com.